2 in his last 9 games. So you're really not getting much production there. We told you what 3, 4, and 5 did in the lineup as the Padres shut them down, basically. Now let's find out if maybe something's changed on this second part of the West Coast trip. All right, we do have a few other things we'll get to. I'm going to ask you a question coming up, bottom of this hour, actually 2. I'm going to ask you about traditions in sports. I read a great article about that, and also saw something in the USA Today business section about moments that changed, really the way we go about our business based upon moments that you saw on TV, TV shows and moments on TV shows. I'm going to ask you, if 8 to 11 is prime time, in other words, 8 to 11, 3 hours of block TV, all time, I don't care from what era, if we were going to block 8 to 11, what show would absolutely have to be included in that? I'll give you details on that. Coming first, though, this gentleman, I have no idea how we're going to get through this, because this is truly, it sounds like a man who is quite learned, quite educated, speaking to basically a moron. Justin Wolfers is his name. He works out of the Wharton Business School, University of Pennsylvania. He joins us right now. Justin, how you doing today?
Chris, I'm doing good, mate. I think it's fair to introduce me as a nerd, but I'm not for a moment going to call you a moron, sir.
Well, you might after we get done about 5 minutes into this thing, so we'll find out. Now, layman's terms is what we're looking for. By the way, thank you for your time initially.
Happy to talk, mate.
What is your title? I know you work out of the Wharton Business School.
I'm an assistant professor of business and public policy.
Now, you wrote, you were part of a study that said NBA officiating, let's take a look at this, white man with a whistle, does he call more fouls on the African-American players? African-American referee with a whistle, does he call more fouls on a white player? What was the impetus to actually do the study?
So I'm an economist by training, and economists, particularly labor economists, have cared for a long time about trying to understand discrimination. And maybe 50 or 100 years ago, it was easy to understand discrimination. We had a very simple theory. It was that one group would hate the other group, and there was malice. And I think thankfully, those days are behind us. But increasingly, those interested in understanding discrimination, economists, psychologists, sociologists, lawyers, and so on, have become aware of what looks like evidence of unconscious bias. So this is even very well-intentioned people, when they have to make very quick decisions, snap, intuitive judgments, might, despite their best efforts, end up making decisions that are colored by the race of those they're evaluating.
Now, why would the NBA be a good case study in particular?
Yeah, in some sense, it's a good case study because I think that the NBA referees are the most professional evaluators in our society. And in some sense, as a scientist, it's the last place I would expect to see any of these biases. These guys are incredibly professional, incredibly well-trained. They get a huge amount of feedback. I'm sure that folks like you give them plenty when they make mistakes. And so in some sense, you can think about the NBA referees here as being the best-case scenario. And so it's not that we're interested in throwing arrows at the NBA at all. In fact, I think the really interesting part here is this isn't about NBA referees. It's if even these guys, with their huge amount of training, appear to suffer an own race bias, by jingo, I worry a bit more about your average Joe who's making hiring and firing decisions, or teachers evaluating students, or police deciding who to pull over, or judges deciding who to put away. And that's the broader social context that I think is much more interesting.
All right, Justin Wolfers from the Wharton School of Business, a gentleman who was part of this original case study. Just give me the bare brass facts of numbers-wise what it is you found out, because then I'll let people know what the NBA said about your original study or your study.
Sure. So the way we study this, the important thing is this is not saying that blacks are more or less fouls than whites. What we're interested in is, for instance, a white player. We examine the same white player through a season and compare the number of fouls he or she earns tonight when most of the referees are of his race versus tomorrow when the referees are of the opposite race. And we find consistently on days in which, for instance, a white player faces an all-white crew, he earns fewer fouls than when a white player faces an all-black crew. And we find a roughly similar pattern also for black players as well, although there the favoritism comes from the black referees, not the white.
What did the NBA say about your original results?
They weren't very complimentary. David Stern has a business to protect, and he's interested in protecting that business. I'm a social scientist. I'm interested in sort of the broader phenomena that we're talking about. And, you know, the truth is, if I were David Stern, I would have embraced the study and said, this is evidence of how far we've come. This isn't like Jackie Robinson. I mean, these are really about subtle unconscious biases. Instead, the NBA claimed to have commissioned a private sector consultant to have run a separate study for them. Now, our original data covered a 14-year period. We then added an extra 3 years to our study, so we have 17 years of data. The NBA decided to analyze 2.5 years of data. They then cut those data into smaller segments, and they claimed to have proven that our evidence is wrong.
Whoops, now there comes a third party to this, is there not?
Well, recently, they came under a lot of pressure from the broader sporting community, not the social science community, but the sports community, who are interested in seeing this proof. And so they've released it to me and a couple of other journalists. And it turns out, when you look at the NBA's own statistical analysis, it's actually consistent with exactly what Joe Price and I originally said in our study.
Now, what does it mean? I'm reading some numbers, though, where it doesn't really amount to more. I think one of the numbers I read was maybe 8 fouls over the entirety of a season.
Yeah, so I think that's the important thing to talk about here is, you know, Stern said we're wrong, and we've got proof that we're wrong. That's completely false, and even his own numbers are consistent with what we find. There is a much more important question, which is, are we finding big biases? So the thought experiment is, on a night in which a player has a refereeing crew all of his own race, he on average earns about 0.2 fouls fewer per 48 minutes played. That's the length of the game, obviously, than on a night in which the refereeing crew is entirely of the opposite race.
But you have to understand, for most of us, 0.2 fouls isn't really a foul. And that's a number that's really just obscure at that point. It doesn't really make a hill of beans worth of a difference.
So then we can think about broader implications. And I agree with that, by the way. And I think it's quite legitimate to say that's potentially a very small number. And this is the sense in which I think the NBA could say, look how far we've come. We're doing pretty well. It requires sophisticated analysis to tease out small effects. By the same token, what does a player do when he runs up 4 fouls in the first half?
He sits.
Exactly. Either he sits or he plays a little less aggressively for the rest of the game.
Okay.
And so what that does is that works against us finding any big effects because the player responds to what the referees are doing. And so that's why when you look at other game outcomes, things like how many turnovers does the player commit, how many blocks or assists does he get, how many points does he score, we also find that the player's contribution deteriorates at all those other margins. And so I think it's probably the case that it deteriorates at those other margins because he's responding to the number of fouls that have been called against him.
So the mindset then becomes, I have to play differently because I picked up 4 fouls, which usually means a less aggressive style of play.
Absolutely. And so, you know, that's the sense in which we think the impacts on the game and game outcomes might be a little bit bigger than if you simply said, you know, this is 10, 11 fouls a season or something like that. But by the same token, I'm very sympathetic to the view that these are subtle effects. That's a question for judgment.
What about what everybody keeps saying? Justin Wolfers, just a couple of more minutes with him. What about the numbers? If you deal in it's a larger pool of African-Americans playing the game, I don't know what's happened in the 17 season that you guys looked at. How many referees, African-American and white? I don't know what the exchange has been. Has there been an increase in white referees? Has there been an increase in black referees? I'm not really sure. Would that number be significant?
Yes and no. So there's been an increase in the number of African-American referees over the last decade. In some sense, the league ought to be applauded for that. That's the sense in which it's significant. That is to say, the league are aware of some of these issues, and I think, you know, it's fair to say that the NBA is an incredibly race-neutral organization and much more integrated than many others. On the flip side, you know, I've had some genuinely idiotic commentary. For instance, Charles Barkley commented that, of course, there's more fouls against blacks, there's more black players. Well, of course we take account of that, complete account of that in the study. In fact, our statement is not that there's more fouls against black players. Again, what we do is we compare the same player night to night through a season. And the question is, do you earn more fouls today versus tomorrow? And is that related to the racial composition
of
the refereeing crew?
The other supposition would have to be that in a split second where you're going to blow the whistle, consciously, subconsciously, you have to decide, I eat it or I blow it based upon the color of the player.
I think that's right. And I think it's probably, I've talked to a lot of referees. These guys strike me as incredibly conscientious fellows. I can't imagine it's conscious. And so, you know, if you want to think of it somewhat more dramatic, and here I'm being melodramatic, okay? And I accept it's melodramatic. But if you want to think of a more dramatic setting for something like this, imagine you're a police officer. You walk down a darkened alley at night. You see a suspect reach towards their back pocket. You have to make a split-second judgment. Are they reaching for their wallet or are they reaching for their gun? In some sense, then, the what we see, you know, a block charge call on the court is something of a metaphor for some of these other interactions we see in society that are more interesting. And the question we ask is, does the skin color of those involved somehow shape, consciously or unconsciously, and we think unconsciously, how your brain interprets the signals that your eyes are giving it.
All right, let me ask you one other question because we have to run. The idea of an African-American head coach versus a white head coach. What about the idea that once you walk on the floor, do you want to go so far as to say that that subconscious nature might actually come to the forefront?
You know, I only want to say what the research says, so I don't want to extrapolate too far from what we know.
Okay. Well, how many years or how long did the study actually take?
Joe Price and I have been working on this for about 2 years.
And what do you think the end result is? Let's just finish up with this. What do you think happens? Let's just say that everything is as accurate as you say. Where do you take this information?
To be clear, it's as accurate as the NBA's data says too, whether they like that or not. But what does it say? It says that even when you work as hard at being unbiased as NBA referees, it looks like race still interferes with your decision-making.
Well, it's an interesting theory. It's an interesting concept, the idea that the NBA was chosen as a system.
I want to be clear here, Chris. That's not a theory. That's a fact. The question, the theory is, what does this say about other social interactions? That's an extrapolation. But the fact, it's a fact that on some nights you earn more fouls than other nights, and those happen to be the nights in which more of the referees are of the opposite race to you.
Well, there you go. We'll leave it at that. You are the math guy. You are the guy out of this, other than perhaps what some of us are afraid to say, that, you know, there might still be things, whether it's an occupation-driven thing or not, that might tell you this is the way I go or that's the way I go.
Chris, that's absolutely right. And if you already knew that there may be, that race may color how you evaluate others, then you're much more self-aware than other people, and I have nothing, our study tells you nothing. But if you didn't know that, then maybe you'll learn something.
All right, Justin, listen, we're running late. We've got to take a quick break. Thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Good, thanks.
All right, that's Justin Wolfers right there. We'll take a quick break here. Bob Huggins is going to join us at the top of the hour. Just wanted to find out. Well, the NBA, I think the big thing was the NBA came down hard and fast on this study, and then their own numbers verified what Mr. Wolfers and his people had put together. All right, we'll take a break. I'm going to ask you, all-time block, 3 hours of TV, and great.